The Record on KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Last week, here's how Seattle writer, best-selling author Lindy West described her experience on Twitter. Quote, "I am micromanaged in real time by strangers. Neo-Nazis mine my personal life for vulnerabilities to exploit, and men enjoy unfettered direct access to my brain so they can inform me for the thousandth time that they would gladly rape me if I weren't so fat." So she shut down her Twitter account. Lindy West, welcome to KUOW.
Thanks for having me.
So we just heard about your struggles with Twitter. Was there one breaking point that sent you off Twitter?
It's funny. None of those things that you just read were really the thing, even though I think to a normal person...
it sounds like enough.
Yeah, especially the third one. People would be like, why would you even ever stay there for one day?
Right.
But I've been dealing with that for at least 5 years. That sort of, sexualized, weaponized use of Twitter, trying to erode my mental health. But, that I actually was coping with fine. The turning point for me was the election. It just suddenly felt like I was spending my time sort of validating this really toxic community, which is epitomized by the president-elect taunting North Korea about its nuclear program. I was just watching this happen, a couple things simultaneously, watching Donald Trump use Twitter to terrorize individual citizens and watching him create potential global catastrophes on this platform, while I was also just sort of personally being distracted and being just wasting a lot of time and energy in this moment where I feel charged to really try to do my best work, in this sort of new scary world.
So that connection you're making, is it just that, man, Donald Trump is just the epitome? Or is there also like a feedback thing? Do you think something's happening on Twitter with Trump and what's okay? Or was everything always there, all along?
I think what we've seen over the last couple of years was this sort of escalation of the disinformation campaign and the fake news, whatever you want to call it, that has sort of swelled and pushed Trump into power. Where I've been dealing with the same people who are these sort of rabid pro-Trump trolls on Twitter. They used to just be rabid anti-feminist trolls who were going after me and my colleagues. And it's literally the same people. I've sort of watched them morph into this army of, really, really aggressive pro-Trump crusaders who are now merging with literal neo-Nazis. And so it's just... for whatever reason, for a complicated web of reasons, Twitter was a really ideal environment. A major reason being, it's pretty much unmoderated. And we've, feminists and people of color and people who've really borne a lot of the brunt of harassment on Twitter for years have been saying, could you please start protecting us? Could you please start instituting some sort of standards and regulations on what kind of... what kind of conduct is acceptable and how much, is hate speech tolerated or not tolerated? And Twitter hasn't really done anything. And eventually it got to this point where this massive throng of people have been able to really dominate that system and dominate, what seems like the truth to people who are not really fully paying attention. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They can push so much disinformation out there with so much aggression that it really, I think, changed the election in a profound way. There was a lot of intimidation going on, a lot of just lies. And all of this was happening on Twitter. And I think Twitter could have done a lot to, set the tone for what is and isn't acceptable on their platform. They're a private company. They can say, yeah, we don't have Nazi, we don't let neo-Nazis organize on our platform, but they didn't care to do that. And here we are. I don't know. It's very complicated and this might sound sort of unhinged on my part, but it was really scary to watch it all happen.
It's complicated. Tech companies are struggling with how to jump in on questions of what's good or bad, what's true or false, and what realistically could you expect from Twitter to make it a Lindy Westable place and a habitable place?
Well, I mean, you know, again, it's not, I didn't leave because of trolling specifically. It's much more complicated than that. So a lot of it is just, I really like Twitter, and I found myself using, like, spending a lot of time there. Uh-huh. And I needed to disengage. And I also just didn't want to validate that community with my presence anymore. You know, I don't want to be a part of the same community as Donald Trump. You know what I mean?
But you said that you said you like Twitter. In fact, you said you believe in it as a democratizing force.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, it falls prey to the same issues as our real democracy, where it still breaks down along these sort of lines of power, and people with power still wield more power on Twitter than people without power. So it's, you know, you still have the most vulnerable people being treated the worst and being driven off the platform. And then you have these sort of entrenched power structures, like, you know, straight white men like Donald Trump and the many, many people who follow him on Twitter having the most power and the loudest voice and the most control. So, you know, it's like, it's the good and the bad. It's everyone can directly tweet at their favorite movie star or at their congressperson or whatever. But also everyone else who wants us to shut up has direct access to us, too. So it's kind of, I think it has been valuable in many ways. And I also think if left unregulated the way that it is, and, you know, Twitter has a terms of service, like Twitter has stated rules, you know, against hate speech and against targeted harassment. And the problem is enforcement. All we're really asking is, could you please, could you have a clear understanding of what targeted harassment is, and the way that it disproportionately affects marginalized people? And could you please enforce those terms of service?
Is there a model? Is there a social media platform that's doing it right?
No, I don't think so.
Why do you think that is?
I mean, it's really difficult just in, I think, in terms of, I mean, and I'm not a web developer. So, you know, people always ask me this, like, how can Twitter fix itself? I don't know. I'm a writer.
You know?
It's not really my job to fix Twitter. It's Twitter's job. But, you know, I think in terms of just manpower, it's difficult to moderate millions and millions of users. I know there are gender imbalances that create a problem. Like, I know that I've heard from people who've tried to work with Twitter to fix these problems that most of the people on the development side are men, and it's sometimes difficult to even perceive what problems might be that don't affect you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's an argument for why we need more women in tech, why we need to support, you know, programs that increase representation, diverse representation, which is exactly the kind of thing that this army of Donald Trump Twitter trolls freaks out about if you mention. And there's a reason. Like, it's all, there's a very clear motivation behind that.
Does Twitter create meanness or just reveal it?
Well,
shine a light on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
light shining's good, right?
Yeah, I guess. I guess. I mean, there's a line between shining a light on something and validating something and normalizing something. Normalization is really what we've seen happen in a really insidious way over the last few years. You know, it's become normal to, you know, tell a feminist that she should go kill herself. Mm-hmm. And that sort of creeping erosion of our social mores has had a big effect on Trump's electability. But, you know, I think Twitter didn't create cruelty, obviously. Yeah. But obviously, like, anonymity definitely fosters cruelty, for sure. And I think it has become kind of a game. It's become sort of gamified and incentivized to, you know, like, trolling is is a culture now where people do this for fun and they try to, they compete with each other and they try to impress each other. And it's, you know, Twitter is a great environment for that. So, you know, it's, there's nothing new, under the sun. This is the way that people behave. People are cruel to each other. People create social hierarchies. People, people try to, you know, break other people down to make themselves feel better or on a bigger level to retain power. And, you know, Twitter just happened to have been a very fruitful platform for that. But it, no, it's not new.
You said that you miss Twitter. How do you connect now with the people you want to connect with in the ways you were doing before?
I feel really disconnected. It's kind of scary. I don't miss it because it's...
You had how many followers?
It's like 95,000 or something. And what I miss is the plurality of perspectives. It's easy to get information from mainstream news sources. You know, I have newspaper subscriptions. I read the news. But in terms of getting perspectives that aren't represented in mainstream newspapers, there's just no better way than Twitter to get real-time, really, really smart analysis of here's what's going on in the news. Here's a person with a different perspective recontextualizing this piece of news in a way that, you know, the New York Times didn't because of the breakdown of that newsroom, because of, you know, XYZ, whatever factors contribute to how news is reported. You know, nothing's actually objective. And so I miss that. And I miss, you know, I primarily use Twitter to joke around with people. You know, it's a community and it's fun. So I miss that. But, you know, I'm still on Facebook, which has its own wealth of problems that I hate. I hate Facebook, too. I hate everything. But I did read a book, you know.
I read a book.
Huh. Sort of. I started a book.
You got about 140 characters in.
Right, exactly. And I was like, oh, man, this is long. Yeah.
So you're gonna go back to Twitter someday?
No, I don't know. Okay. Maybe not. I don't have any concrete plans. I mean,
What did you think that it was news? It was even trending on Twitter that Lindy West left Twitter.
I know.
Weird?
I was trending higher than Charles Manson.
Tip
finally.
Of the touche.
Yeah, I know.
Congratulations.
Really stick it to that guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was weird. I only knew that I was trending on Twitter because people kept texting me about it because I'm not on Twitter. I don't know what's going on Twitter. But I was surprised that it was a story at all. I mean, I made it into a story to a degree because I wrote a column about it. Mm-hmm. But I kind of thought that a person could use a website or not use a website and that was fine. You know, I didn't realize that it was going to be...
you're digging at something really important to all of us.
Yeah, I guess so. And that was, you know, partially intentional. I think it's important to remember that, you know, it's a privilege to be able to just quit. I don't have to worry about whether or not this is going to affect me professionally because I work for big media companies that promote my work no matter what. So even if I'm not personally on Twitter, my work is being promoted on Twitter by The Guardian or by The New York Times or whoever I'm writing for. So it's not the same as a struggling writer, especially a marginalized person trying to get their work seen and trying to become successful and get a foothold. That it's a much higher stakes for those people to quit Twitter than for me. Like, I can sort of do this experiment and call Twitter's bluff about whether or not it's necessary to be successful and to self-promote on their platform. I can be like, I think it's fine. I'm just going to go. But hopefully, by turning this into a big stink, which was, again, semi-accidental, if Twitter actually listens and makes their platform a little bit safer for people who really need it and who don't have the luxury of just up and quitting, that's great. I mean, I would be thrilled.
Some people don't have bestsellers like Shrill. Lindy West does. Seattle Zone. It's really good to see you again. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You have a platform here. You know that, right?
I'll be here. I'll come in every day and just ramble.
Excellent. KUOW, Seattle, talking with Lindy West, author of Shrill, and we'll be back with more, so stay tuned.